Everyone, welcome to our webinar this morning. We're so excited to have you all here. We'll be discussing 1031 exchanges across state lines. My name is Molly Mabry. I'm the Director of Marketing at Mill Creek Commercial, and our co-founder and partner, Spencer Taylor, will be joining us today together with our guest speaker, Nace Cohen. And to introduce our speaker, Nace is the president and founder of 1031 Exchange Connection. He has performed thousands of 1031 exchanges and has been working them since 2002. Nace's expertise has positioned him as one of the most sought after real estate tax consultants in the field. And a little bit about 1031 Exchange Connection. They are a 1031 exchange qualified intermediary and real estate tax consultancy based in Southwest Florida. So they help facilitate 1031 exchanges, which allows their clients to defer capital gains taxes when purchasing like-kind real estate investment properties. We're so excited to have Nace with us today and are excited to learn from him. And again, before we get started, I just want to remind everyone to please use the Q&A feature of Zoom during the webinar to ask your questions, and we will address them at the end during the Q&A portion. And also, this webinar will be available on demand and it is recorded. So we will send out a link to the webinar following it. So I will now turn the time over to Spencer and Nace.
Thanks, Molly. Nace, welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks, Spencer. Thank you, Molly. That was a great intro.
Excited for this topic. I know a lot of people, when they do 1031 exchanges, are considering, you know, crossing a state line, maybe for a better market. That, you know, there's 100 different reasons why someone would do it. And so appreciate you spending a few minutes with us to talk about the nuances of crossing that state line in that in your 1031 exchange. So take it away. Let's dive in.
Of course. And thank you for this opportunity. Well, the first thing I want to do real quick, I'm sure most of the audience knows about 1031, but just to kind of go over quickly what the general safe harbor rules about 1031 are. The first thing you have to realize is that it's a federal law. Code section 1031 is part of the Internal Revenue Code section. So that means it applies to all states. All states have to follow the federal law. So that's where we start. That's the general rule. The idea of doing this is not to pay the tax on the sale of the old property. We're going to sell something, let's call it the old property or the relinquished, and we're going to buy something called the new one or the replacement. And so the first requirement is that both what you're selling and what you're buying have to be held for investment or used to produce income, such as a rental property. 1031 only applies to real estate now. Okay, which is typically defined as dirt and anything attached. Personal property exchanges are no longer allowed as of January 1st, 2019, with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Okay, so real estate only. So held for investment, rental, you know, property, income producing, kind of a gray area. Okay, there's a lot of nuances that go with that, but I don't want to discuss that here because we have other topics that are more pressing. The timing, there's some timing rules that you got to be aware of. As soon as you sell or close, I should say, on the old property, you have 45 days to identify replacements. You can identify up to three replacements. After that, you're going to have to follow some rules that limit you as to how many you can identify. All right. Identification does not mean going into contract. Those are two separate functions. Identification is something you do with the qualified intermediary. It's one of our functions. Also, for the date of closing, you have 180 days to close, to get entitled to the new property. And what you buy, I have to see it on that 45-day list, all right? So 45 days to identify, 180 days to close. If you want to pay zero tax, which should be everybody's goal, right? Two things you have to do. Number one is you have to buy equal or more in value than where you sold. Okay, the value is pretty much defined as the selling price less your selling costs, but not your debt. Okay, so when you buy the new property, you're going to have to reinvest the debt amount, which you can reinvest with debt or with equity like cash or a combination of both. So number one, you got to buy equal or more. And number two, you have to spend all the cash from the sale of your old property. You have to reinvest all of it, which is what you put into it originally. Let's call that equity, plus the gain. All right. So all of that has to be reinvested into the new one. And if you do those two things, buy equal or up, reinvest all the cash, no tax. If you don't reinvest all the cash, or if you buy a little bit down, it doesn't necessarily toast your exchange. It just means that part is taxable, right? Whoever the taxpayer is that's selling the old property has to be the same taxpayer, okay, to buy the new one. Taxpayer, the IRS refers to as, think of it as the tax return. What tax return is the old property being reported on? We want on the new one the same tax return. So you can't switch taxpayers. You'll toast your exchange. And then, of course, the last thing is you have to use a qualified intermediary to get this done. Don't try to do this on your own, because if you do and they see that, they automatically toast your exchange, even if you did everything else right. All right?
Nace, the one comment that just breaks my heart when I hear it.
Yes.
Hey, looking forward to doing an exchange, 1031 exchange. I got the money in my account ready to go.
Yeah, you got a big problem.
Don't touch it. Don't touch the money.
You know, unless it was, you can't touch the money. Once you have control, it's over.
Yeah.
The only place where you can do that is like if you had the government take over your property, say eminent domain. All right. But that's a different code section. That's 1033.
Yeah.
You know, in that case, you can control the funds and you have 2 years to reinvest. But if you, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about.
That's a topic for our next webinar with you, Nace.
The 1033 exchange? Yeah. Okay, that's fine. That's good stuff too. You know, I am getting a lot of calls on that.
Yeah.
Eminent domain and stuff. But let's talk about 1031. So, The QI's role is, number one, by law, you can't touch the money in between the sale of the old and the buy of the new. So what that means is that before you close on the old property, you have to get in touch with the QI so we can set it up. There's documents I have to prepare. There's instructions that go to the title agent or the lawyer that's doing the closing on the old property. And similarly, on the new side, on the new property, we have to do all that. But in between, we have to hold your money, okay? So since you don't know me and I'm holding all your money, you want to make sure of a couple of things. Number one is you want to make sure I'm bonded, okay? The bonds will protect you in case the QI runs off with your money, all right? And don't just take my word for it that I'm bonded. You know, get a copy of it. We put ours right on the website. Also, make sure that I have liability insurance, okay? Professional liability is a great move because it tells you that I'm very confident about what I talk about regarding 1031. So that will protect you in case I give you the wrong advice, all right? So bonded, insured, and let's also make sure that I'm using what's called non-commingled accounts, all right, segregated. So I don't take the money and put it all in one account. I use separate trust accounts, okay, for a lot of reasons. You know, I'm also a CPA, and I'm a very highly experienced bookkeeper. So I know at all times how much money is in each one of my exchanger's accounts, and that's important, okay? And the QI should be able to tell you at any point in time, right away, in real time, how much money you have in the account. You can use the money in the account for deposits on the new properties, and of course the closing. Can't use it to go out and buy a Camaro or anything like that. You know, I'm going to tell you no, or wait to the end. All right. So those are the basic rules. And I want to go over what's happening currently in this environment. Most of our exchanges, it's kind of a quirky thing that's going on right now, is we have people in different states, okay, selling their properties, and they're coming down here to Florida, all right, for whatever reason. So when you sell, for example, and if you can see my screen, property in New York, right? So you own a property in New York, a brownstone in Brooklyn, wherever it is, and you want to exchange that property for property in Florida, you know, what's involved with that? Okay. So the first thing that I do when I approach these types of exchanges, interstate or state to state, is I want to know if they're a resident of that state or a non-resident. Okay. Because if you're a resident of the state, you can just sell it, move the money to Florida, no issues, right? But if you're a non-resident, okay, which means you're not really filing tax returns in New York, or you're filing what's called a part-year resident type return, New York's going to want their share of the tax up front. They treat you like a foreigner, okay? So if you're doing a 1031, there's this tax form, okay, that you have to send in. And it's called the IT-2663. You just have to tell New York, for example, down here in part three, box B, okay, that you're doing a 1031, okay, and you give a brief description of the transfer, okay? So that sorry if I lost you guys. Okay. Let me go back to my.
We're good. Keep going.
Oh, good. Okay.
I think we had some technical difficulty there.
Yeah. You know, sometimes that happens, but that's okay. All right. So picture this. So I wrote an article on this because I was getting a lot of questions. Let's say, for example, you live in New York. So you're a resident. Okay. And in addition to the house where you live, you have a rental property there, okay? You've owned the rental property for years. It's fully depreciated. You're getting close to retirement, like you're a baby boomer, or we have a lot of those. And so what you want to do is you want to sell the rental, and someday you want to move to Florida, okay? So what you do is rather than when you sell the rental, you don't, you know, if you don't do a 1031, then you're going to pay a hefty tax. Not only are you going to pay the capital gains tax to the feds, but you're also going to pay an income tax to New York. So you're looking at about 30-35% tax on that gain, which if you're selling fully depreciated property, or, you know, that's what, or if you experience a large gain, you're going to have a bad day when you figure out what the tax is. So in order to get you to have a good day, we consider the exchange, okay? So what we want to do is we want to exchange that property, we want to sell it, hire the QI, get it all set up, and then when you close, that money will come to us, okay? And so what we're going to do is we're going to take that money, okay, and we're going to go buy something in Florida. Florida is a no income tax state. There's no personal income tax in the state of Florida. Okay. So what happens is I get a lot of questions, for example, well, what if I sell that Florida property down the road? Okay. Am I going to have to pay New York the tax that was deferred from the first property? So the answer to that is if you're a resident of New York and you still live it up there, yeah, you will, because they tax you on the status where you live. All right. But what if, for example, you're holding that Florida property and what you do is you sell the property where you live now in New York and you take that gain tax free, right? Principal residence up to $500,000 of the gain is tax free. If you're married, $250,000 is excluded if you're single. Okay. So you pocket that money and then you move into the Florida property. Okay. And that was rental. Okay. So so after you move in, you change it, or what's called retitle it. You don't have to retitle it, but you go ahead and you make it your primary residence. Now, the act of converting that rental property in Florida to a primary residence is not a taxable transaction. Okay. It's just a change of status. And so what you do is now you live there for a while. Okay. And if you buy a property in a 1031 that later on becomes your principal residence, and then you want to sell it and take advantage of that principal residence exclusion again, which is code section 121, you could do that once every 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. But in a 1031, if you're going to sell that property as a primary residence, you got to hold it for 5 full years at least. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was another quirky thing that changed. It's kind of a trap, but get with your CPA on that or call us and we'll take you through that. But let's say you do that. So let's say the Florida property, you held it 2 years as a rental. Then you sold New York. You took that gain tax free. You moved to Florida. You lived there for at least 3 years. And now you want to sell it. You want to sell it. Here's the question. Is New York still owed that tax, okay, that you rolled into it, that you deferred into it, okay? And the answer is no, because you're selling it as a Florida resident now, right? You're no longer a resident of New York, all right? And so what you've done essentially is you've excluded that New York tax. It's not just deferred, it's now excluded. And a lot of people weren't seeing this. Even the professionals weren't telling their clients about it. In fact, a lot of CPAs that I've talked to is no, you got to pay that New York tax. And I'm like, where? You know, where does it say that? Because New York doesn't have something called the clawback rule. Okay. It can't claw back the tax. In fact, there's four states, or I should say there's four states that have clawback rules. California, Oregon, Montana, and Massachusetts. So if you sold from one of those four states and then to Florida and then sold Florida later, you're going to have to deal with those clawback rules in those four states. But that means that there's 46 states that don't have clawback rules. And of those 46, how much tax, personal income tax? Most of them, right? So this is a strategy that you really need to focus on if you're thinking about moving to the South, like Florida, or another no income tax state like Texas, or you know, New Mexico, or one of those, Nevada. So all those types of exchanges can really net you some significant equity when you're planning these correctly.
So Nace, real quick, a couple questions on this clawback. Does your residency matter? So California, let's say you owned a rental property in California, you live in California, you sell the rental property, you do a 1031 exchange into another state, and then you move out of California. Does California still want their taxes after you sell that investment property? And does there need to be any sort of time that needs to transpire? You mentioned 5 years, or, you know, kind of.
California is tough. So they have a clawback.
Yeah.
Okay. No matter, you know, if you're a resident again of California, then you don't have to fill out forms. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to file the California income tax return at the end of the year and report your tax. But if you're a non-resident of California and you sell California real estate, you've got to fill out this 593 form, okay? And after you give them all this information, there's a box that you want to check, and down here, it's part four. And it's like, where is it over here? Number 10, the transfer qualifies either as a simultaneous or a deferred like kind, which is really what you want to do. And then over here, they're going to want specific information about the transaction on page two. But this is the form you fill out. Now, here's the killer. Here's the death knell with California, because it has a clawback rule. This form, this 593, let's say that you did that like we discussed about New York, you know, where you moved to Florida from, you moved from California to Florida, and now you're, whatever, you're running that Florida property, you exchanged a California property into it. California wants this form every year. Okay. And if you don't, then they can send something out to you and tax you. So let me look at these instructions real quick. So here's the instructions for the form 493. Okay. And if I go down here, I got to find it here for 1031. Hang on. I'm going to find it. And there's something that says exchange amount of completed deferred. See, you can have a fail. If you have a failed exchange, then you have to turn the money. But there's somewhere in here, it says that, and if you look at this, and I was looking at it before, that you have to file this every year. Okay, that that property, the new one, the replacement, if it's not sold, because as soon as you sell that replacement property down the road, they're going to want their tax, California. Yeah. And this is how they collect it. All right. So so you have to kind of be aware of that. It's a tough rule. They are the most difficult to deal with. And they also place a lot of responsibility on the QI. For example, let's say you sell something in California, you buy something in Florida, but you didn't buy equal or up, or you took cash out of the transaction. Okay. The 593 form is going to compute the tax on the boot, number one. And then number two, if there's still deferred tax left over, they want you to file this form every year until you sell that replacement down the road. So pretty much works that way with all the other clawback states, Oregon, Montana, Massachusetts, but each has their own separate form, California being the toughest. All right. So interesting stuff. All right. But that's the story. What else is, what are the questions are we having today, Spencer?
Nothing yet. We would love questions. We want to get to all your questions that you have.
So like Minnesota, for example, that's an interesting state. You know, Minnesota doesn't really have it. It doesn't have a clawback rule and doesn't have anything that you have to report. You just sell Minnesota and you're buying in Florida. And you're done. Okay. The question is, if you sell that Florida property down the road, you're still a resident of Minnesota. Yeah, you're going to have to pay tax on that profit. Mm-hmm. But if you move to Florida and you don't, and you sell it down the road, you don't owe Minnesota tax. So this is, so let me ask you this. Okay. This is an interesting question. All right. Take a look at New York there. How much revenue, tax revenue, is New York going to lose by people exchanging their investment properties from New York to, say, Florida, right? Then moving to Florida, converting it to principal or whatever, or just keep on doing 1031s down the road. And so New York is out of that tax, right? If that person is now a Florida resident. So how long do you think it'll take for New York to figure this out, that they need a clawback rule? Because we all know, for example, New York needs money. Okay, most states do. So when they figure this out, or when they see this, okay, they're probably going to enact a clawback rule. Okay, so those of you considering selling your investment property, or having investment property in New York or one of the other personal income tax states, you may want to put it in gear now to exchange from those states into property that's not in that state, such as, let me ask you this, Spencer, do you have any DSTs, for example, that are in non-taxable states?
So we offer something similar to a DST called a tenant in common, a TIC. And we've offered them in both Florida and Texas, Tennessee. They go fast.
They go fast, right?
They go really fast. And they go fast exactly for the reasons that you are outlining today, is because a lot of people view themselves living the best their golden years in a tax-free state.
Why not? You know, Florida's beautiful, for example. Okay. Mm-hmm. Without getting political, there's no income tax. There's no personal income tax in mm-hmm. Florida. Okay. Mm-hmm. In general, cost of living is a lot less. Okay. Like, for example, California's gas is like, I don't know, $7 a gallon right now. Ours is at $4. Okay. Yeah. So they tack on another $3 for, you know, different types of government type taxes. Okay. And we all know what the government is doing with those taxes, right? So if that upsets you, then you want to, and you have rental or properties or investment properties such as land or income producing, then you really want to take a look at this and see if you can take advantage of this before those states enact clawback rules.
And those state income tax-free states are what? Washington, Nevada, Texas,
Florida.
I want to say North and South Dakota. Maybe.
Tennessee, one of them does.
I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe. And Tennessee does only taxes.
No W-2 tax, right? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are the states you want to look at. You can Google it to see, exactly which states those are and if they appeal to you. Yeah. Most people are coming to Florida for the reasons I stated. Texas, there a lot of them are going to Texas too, but they're concerned about, the migration in and the open borders and stuff. So we're seeing more to this state.
Nace, here's a question from Brandon. He says, in your opinion, is it worth selling a property from a non-clawback state and 1031 exchanging into a clawback state? He says, I'm currently trying to sell a property in Utah and looking to buy a property in California. From what you are saying, I'm starting to rethink this idea.
Yeah, I would. Because what you're going to do is the deferral from Utah is going to be taxed for California down the road. No matter what you do, even if you were to sell California down the road and say invest in Texas or Florida or Nevada, something like that, California is going to want you to, they're going to claw back that tax, all of it.
You're going to, once you sell Utah and you go into California and then you leave California, you're going to file that form every year.
Right.
Or you basically telling California that you still own it, that you haven't sold it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to owe California. So, I've had a couple of those when people sold Florida and moved to California, and they had family there or whatever. And I'm like, why are you doing that? Because California is a high tax. It's like 13%, And if you have a gain to the feds too, and something that was depreciated, you're going to have depreciation recapture on top of the appreciation that you're going to have to pay that gains tax on. It's just, you're going to lose almost half your money.
Yeah.
Crazy. Don't do it. Yeah.
Crazy.
I think that 1031 is such a great code section. It really is it's the one thing that our government got right, is this code section 1031. A lot of people call it a loophole, but it's really not. Okay? Because if you think about it, you're not getting the cash, right? You're taking the cash, you're going to buy another property. And when you do that, you're putting money in the pockets of other folks, and they pay tax on that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but you actually are paying tax to the governments, the state governments. So you're funding them too. Yeah. Okay. All the while not having to pay the federal income tax. So it's a great code section. It's one of the only things they got right besides the principal residence exclusion. okay? Which, in my opinion, they're going to have to lift it above 500, but they, I haven't seen anything about that yet. There is talk on Capitol Hill, okay, of getting rid of 1031, okay? And the FEA, the Federation of Exchange Accommodators, works hard, very, very feverishly on lobbying to keep 1031. You know, you would think that our government would embrace something like this and keep it, but a lot of the you know, there's one side of the government that says, well, we want these folks to pay tax, we need that tax, you know. So so you're gonna have to get with your congressmen, so forth, and urge them to keep this code section in place. Yeah. Okay. It's really going to help everybody down the road. But the whole key to this thing is education. The more we teach you about it, the more informed you are, the more you're going to take advantage of this. Okay. So I don't want you to think of it as a loophole. It's a great code section. It's a way to build equity and wealth in real estate. And I think that real estate has gone up, right, for the last, mm-hmm. I don't know, 140 months or so, last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we don't see any end in that, especially in Florida, because a lot of these folks are coming down with cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, loans, interest rates have gone up. And I know, I remember back in the 90s when interest rates were like, oh, God, you know, 12, 14%. I was so happy when it went down to like 8% and I went out and bought something, you know. Now it's at 7 and people are flipping out, you know, because it was at 2 or 3. So
Nace, you bring up one important element as you might own a rental property outside of the state that you reside in. And that's what happens with your tax return. What state income taxes are you paying? You're earning money. Let's say, I love this example. You're earning money in Texas or Florida, and you live in Indiana, or you live in Utah, or you live somewhere other than where your rental property is.
Yeah, you got to pay tax. If you're a resident of a taxable, of a state that taxes you on personal income, okay, and you own property in Texas or Florida, even if the situs is there, okay, in a non-taxable state, because you're a resident of that state, of the other state that's taxing you, that income from Florida or Texas from that rental property is going to be taxed in that state.
And if there's, so if you live in a state, well, okay, like let's go back to this California example. You live in Utah, you own in California, what you're paying California tax. Do you also pay Utah state tax?
You pay Utah state tax, but you do get a credit for the California tax you paid.
Okay.
How's that?
So if the state you own in is less than the state you live in terms of state income tax, you're never going to pay more than what the state you live in.
That is correct.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Good point.
Okay. I mean, that's a nuance that I think a lot of people may not think about as they're, okay, I'm generating revenue income in a different state. You're going to have to file a state return, right?
Well, I mean, you're going to have to file a part year return or non-resident return
in California,
right? And pay the tax just on that property.
Yeah.
If any, right? And then, of course, you're going to have to follow your regular income tax return for Utah.
Yeah. And to everyone, talk to your CPA about this. Talk to them before you do this so that you're aware of kind of all the nuances, because there are a lot of nuances that we're not covering here, but just something to be mindful of, a conversation to take to your tax professional as you explore this road, right?
I agree. I mean, a lot of people, you know, we tell folks all the time, talk to your CPA, let them know what you're doing. Let them know that you're selling property. It's a material transaction to your tax return. Tell them what you're doing. Ask them if a 1031 applies to you. Okay. And if it does, then you want to start talking to an intermediary. Just because I'm a CPA and people call me about it, you know, and say, hey, should I do one? Well, I don't really know your personal situation. Most QIs don't. Okay. If you want to give me some background, I could give you some general information on it, which I like to do, but I can't specifically talk about your personal situation unless I was. And if I was your CPA, I can't be your QI. Mm-hmm. It has to be separate functions, okay? So, yeah, the QI is one of those funny roles that the IRS set up. And one thing about the QI that everybody should know, remember I went back to talking about the bond and so forth, right? QIs are not regulated for the most part by the feds. It's just a requirement that you have to use one, okay? So if you're a good QI, you self-regulate. You self-regulate by getting a bond. You want to protect those clients that are entrusting you to hold their money for them during this period of time. Be aware of that. That's a real important thing. I've been in this business 22 years now. I've been a CPA for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And I think this code section is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I really do. But it can be abused, and you want to be very careful who you choose as a QI. Okay. Don't choose someone that's doing this as a sidekick or, you know, and don't be afraid to ask questions. Where are you putting my money? Okay. Yeah. Is it commingled with someone else? Are you bonded? Okay. Because if they're not, you have no, you have no recourse to get those funds back. All right. So you got to do your research, and you want to be with reputable people in the industry, like myself, like Spencer and Mill Creek, and we're the ones that are really trying to help you. Okay, yeah. So be aware of that.
Andrew kind of has a good question along these lines. He says, "Can trust accounts for exchangers be interest bearing?"
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. You know. It just started to be a topic of conversation because rates have gone up in the last year. But when rates were so far down, okay, very little, if any, a lot of QIs, myself included, weren't giving interest because there was hardly any to be earned, okay? But at the same time, if you want interest, then there may be some fee issues. They may charge a higher fee. So work the numbers out with the intermediary like us. We have a system. We use a bank that has separate trust accounts. And in each trust account, I can specify the interest that goes to the client. And the bank will give them a 1099 and all that. It is taxable. But yeah, you could get it.
So I think as we kind of wrap up here, from what we've seen here at Mill Creek, and we have a lot of buyers selling in one state and moving their investment into another state where we have offerings. And so, Nace, I want your opinion on this. I think this is good because it allows for the investor, the landlord, right, to go to a place in the country that's best for them, right? They're not defined by state lines.
No.
And
federal law.
A lot of landlords get into real estate in their late 20s and their 30s, right?
Sure.
They're anchored down by a lot of things in their life, from elementary school where their kids attend, to work, to a whole lot of different things, their church, their community, right?
Sure.
And so they think, okay, I like this rental because it's right down the street. I like it because I can check in. I like it because I can better serve my tenants. But there comes a point in time where that's not the best asset for the portfolio. And so this is great because it allows the landlord, the investor, to go where it's most productive. And it disregards state lines, which I think is really helpful in kind of legacy building and wealth preservation and all those different reasons, right?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. okay, is what kind of legacy do you want to leave for your beneficiaries?
Yeah.
Okay. Because if you don't plan it right, you're going to give most of it to the government.
Right.
You don't want to do that. You want to give it to the, to your kids, to their kids and so forth, because, you know, going to college and all that stuff's expensive. Okay. The only other way to get out of this tax is you have to die, you know, because then they get it at a step up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, take advantage of this, because if you do it right, not only are you going to build wealth, but you're going to leave everybody in your circle, you know, more equity, more money, if you will. And they can use that. You know, that's a, it's a, that's a big topic. It's a big, you know, situation that people talk about a lot. I get it a lot. What about someone that, say, for example, has all their family up north, right? But they've got some investment properties. They want to go to Florida or wherever and retire, but they also want to keep their property up in Minnesota or New York or wherever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because that's where the grandkids are and so forth. Right. Can they do that? Well, they have to, if they don't want to be taxed on that property that they exchanged to Florida down the road, you have to establish residency in Florida, correct? Doesn't mm-hmm. mean you can't go back to Minnesota or New York and stay there in your, call it a vacation residence, okay? Sure. It just means that you have to, you know, you have to kind of reclassify things within your real estate, right?
Yeah.
So, a lot of people get into this 6 month and a day, you know, in Florida, and then 5 months and 29 days and, you know, wherever. Okay. All that works. Okay. You know, then people ask me, well, how do the states audit that, or the feds, you know, and there's no sure way to audit that, but you know, you have to either keep a diary or document what you're doing. Okay, is a great way to do it. If you tell them you're in Florida most of the time and they look at your, you know, your gas receipts and they're all in New York for the whole year, you got a problem, right? Yeah. So if you're going to do it, do it. You know, if you're going to make the move to Florida, move to Florida. Don't try to, you know, disguise it as something else. That's what I tell people.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Nace, if anyone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can do that?
Two ways. Just call us at our phone number, 239-659-1031, or you could go to our website, 1031connection.com, and you can email me right through the website.
To all of our attendees, thank you so much for joining us. We sure appreciate it. Appreciate your questions. And this has been great. This has been great. Thank you, Nace, for your
thank you, Spencer. And thank you, Molly.
Yeah.
For having this. And you know, if any questions come up, just give us a shout. We don't charge for talk. Okay.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it. We'll end the webinar now.
Thank you.